This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
For the time being, both sides believe that they can win on the battlefield. And as long as this is the case, any effort regarding a ceasefire won't be successful, because there are sufficient arms, more than sufficient arms available in Libya for them to fight, to go on with the fighting for months.
That's Wolfgang Puschtei of the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations on the prospects for a ceasefire in the country. Details next. Also, an agreement to restore peace and reconciliation in the Central African Republic seems to be at risk, and Algeria's corruption crackdown on former top government officials and business leaders has continued. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the African Union's High-Level Committee on Libya has expressed concern at outside interference in the besieged country and proposed the creation of a special joint UN and AU envoy. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department is investigating how four U.S.-manufactured Javelin anti-tank missiles capable of destroying tanks or even low-flying helicopters with great precision were found when General Khalifa Haftar's troops fled his headquarters in Garyan. According to the serial numbers and other clues, the missiles were sold to France in 2010, which has said they were damaged and planned for demolition. Wolfgang Puschtei, security and policy analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the possibility of joint African Union-UN efforts to stabilize Libya and stop foreign interference.
Mr. Ghassan Salameh is UN Special Representative since June 2017. His predecessors have all these terms for about 2 years. I would say a new political approach for Libya is required. The 2016 Skhirat Agreement is obviously dead, and probably right now there would be a very good timing to appoint a new Special Representative or envoy. The question is, does it make sense to have someone who is also a Special Representative of the African Union? I would say the more legitimacy such an envoy or special representative has, the better. But it needs to be discussed with the Libyans if they are willing to accept an African Union envoy. And I'm, to be honest, not so sure about this. Furthermore, it would be also important to have only one organization to give guidance to the special representative. It would be a nightmare if the UNSMIL special representative would need to mediate between UN and the African Union.
The United States State Department is investigating how four U.S.-manufactured Javelin anti-tank missiles were found in Garyan when General Haftar's troops fled from his quarters in Garyan. According to their serial number and other clues, the missiles were sold to France in 2010. Is that considered enough evidence that France is backing Haftar's military push to take over Tripoli?
Let's have first a look on the French national interest with regard to Libya. This interest is mainly security related. Of course, there are also some economic interests, but the key is security. The stability in the wider sub-Saharan region is of vital importance for France, for various reasons. An ungoverned space as it is right now in southern Libya can be used and is used as a safe haven by the Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, by the Islamic State and other terrorists. This is a deadly threat to the region. A deadly threat to the region and therefore also a threat to French vital interests. In order to fight terrorism in this region, the French need a Libyan partner. And I would say this is a simple answer. The French don't have any alternative. There is no alternative to have than the Libyan National Army. The Government of National Accord has no influence in southern Libya whatsoever. This was the case even before Haftar occupied Fezzan. So if the French want to fight terrorism, they need to cooperate with the Libyan National Army. The presence of these Javelin missiles is, from my point of view, not an evidence for French support to the Libyan National Army to take over Tripoli. The Libyan National Army has plenty of Russian Cornet anti-tank missiles. Those are more than sufficient to take up the pickup or a T-55 main battle tank, and they have even a greater range than the Javelins. If the French would support Haftar for a takeover of Tripoli, they would do it by other means.
While there are so many calls for a ceasefire in Libya, Haftar is intensifying his military multi-pronged attack to take over Tripoli. What do you make of that?
Right now, both sides are not interested in a ceasefire for the time being. I've talked to some contacts in Misrata just yesterday, and they are stating the same like my contacts in the east. For the time being, both sides believe that they can win on the battlefield. And as long as this is the case, any efforts regarding a ceasefire won't be successful. Not even if the international support is limited to the both sides, because there are sufficient arms, more than sufficient arms available in Libya for them to fight, to go on with the fighting for months.
That was Wolfgang Puschtei, security and policy analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi. An independent expert warns an agreement to restore peace and reconciliation in the Central African Republic is at risk because of violations by some of the signatories to the accord. The expert submitted her report yesterday to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports from the Council in Geneva.
CIR authorities view the agreement signed by the government and 14 armed groups on February 6th in the capital Bangui as a real opportunity to bring peace to this conflict-devastated country. Independent expert Marie-Thérèse Keita-Bokoum says the deal allows for armed groups to participate in the running of the government. It highlights the importance of human rights and justice for the victims of years of conflict-inspired atrocities. If implemented, she says true peace and development for the country could be achieved. Unfortunately, she says, deadly coordinated attacks by several armed groups in the Pau region in May have violated the terms of the accord. She speaks through an interpreter.
If these armed groups claim their place in the peace process, they must immediately put an end to violence. They must also recall that they can be prosecuted criminally for their direct involvement in the commission of these heinous acts. Such acts, if they are not punished, may endanger the success of the peace process.
Bokoum notes CAR's justice system is not effective and must be reformed to meet people's aspirations. The United Nations reports more than 5 years of civil conflict has killed thousands of people, internally displaced more than 642,000 civilians, and caused nearly 575,000 people to seek refuge in neighboring countries. More than half of CAR's population of 4.6 million needs humanitarian assistance. Speaking through an interpreter, independent expert Bokoum says addressing the psychosocial needs of this traumatized nation is the very core of the healing process.
It is only by providing a response to the situation that Central Africans will fully be able to move towards reconciliation, living together, and sustainable peace. Support to the Central African authorities in this area is crucial.
Legal counselor at the CAR mission at the United Nations in Geneva, Serge Hervé Saboro, commends the high quality of work by the independent expert. He says his country is multiplying its efforts to bring the political crisis to an end. He denounces the armed groups who are reneging on the commitments they signed onto in the peace deal. He says the peace agreement must be respected by all and lead to disarmament, to justice, to reconciliation, and to a country that respects the rule of law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Some Africans with disabilities are urging their governments to ease challenges in their environment that they say excludes them from work opportunities. They point out that Lesotho is the only African country which has ratified the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People with Disabilities Rights in Africa. Eugene Wimana has details from Kigali.
Many Ugandans with disabilities say they live in the shadow of the rest of the population's development. just because of how they were created. Many were denied educations, but even the ones who managed to study, like Wamora Jacqueline, say discrimination makes their skills fade from lack of use as they are rejected for job after job. Jacqueline says it is too stressing because you can succeed on the written job exam but get excluded after they see you in the interview. The employers immediately worry about your chairs, tables, etc. You get fired before you even start. In Kigali, some say though the capital is growing, making provisions for the disabled is an afterthought. Kwizera Damtus explains. Damtus says, even if she gets a job, it can be very difficult to attend because many offices are in tall buildings and there are no ways for people with disabilities to reach upper floors. She notes the infrastructure also is a great challenge. These problems should be addressed if African countries sign and ratify the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the rights of persons with disabilities in Africa. It was adopted in Geneva in February 2018, but the signing and ratification journey seems to have hit the wall. Yen Kam Jong Yang Sik Yen is the chairperson of African Union Commission of Human Rights. He says he cannot understand why this protocol and the one for elderly people's rights cannot be signed.
These two protocols are essentially African protocols for the benefit of the African citizens. There's no reason why Africa should rush and adopt the CRPD, the UN one, and not adopt our own, you know.
Olivera Mukabaramba is the Minister of State for Social Affairs in Ghana's Ministry of Local Administration. She says she knows about the hardships of Rwandans with disabilities. She promises that the country will sign the disabilities protocol very soon. The minister says the protocol is good. It's there to protect our vulnerable people. There's no way we cannot sign and ratify it. She says she thinks bureaucracy is the only hang-up. The United Nations says this protocol has great potential to strengthen the implementation of universal human rights for 84 million Africans with disabilities and make use of their skills and potential. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
It's over 3 weeks since Zimbabwe banned its multi-currency system and reintroduced the Zimbabwean dollar as a legal tender. For a brief moment, many thought the government had struck the right chord. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi has more details.
Harare resident Tafadzwa Majoni is a mother of four. She says the Zimbabwean dollar has not lived up to expectations.
There hasn't been any improvement with reference to the stabilization of the prices of basic goods. In reality, for most women, it's actually becoming difficult to buy basic sanitary products. The prices have increased. Basic food commodities keep on increasing. It's difficult to really see tangible results.
This is happening against a background of a disgruntled civil service, unhappy with the meagre salary increases they recently received from government. And Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube recently hinted there may be fresh fuel price hikes to match a liter of petrol to one American dollar. Daniel Chigudu is a journalist who has covered Zimbabwe's political and economic developments for years. He says trust is what is missing in the equation.
The biggest challenge that we have in Zimbabwe is an issue of trust. People no longer have trust in the laws and in the government, because you see there's too much of police inconsistency.
As evidence of that inconsistency, he points to the government's introduction of bond notes as a surrogate currency, trading at par with the US dollar, followed by acknowledgement that the bond notes had lost much of their value, then the declaration of the Zim dollar as the only legal tender. Chigudu says government should consider policies they can keep up with. Majoni says long-lasting solutions will come from a collective effort.
Captains of industry, both the small and the big industries, are not having a conversation with the government. They are not talking to each other.
Critics say the government will need more strategies to support the reintroduction of the Zimbabwean dollar, which has not performed well so far. While it is now illegal for businesses to charge in US dollars, most shops are charging the Zimbabwean dollar equivalent for basic commodities. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
21 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Algeria's corruption crackdown on former top government officials and business leaders has continued with the detention of former industry minister Youssef Youssef. State television reported that the Supreme Court ordered him held yesterday on allegations of disbursement of public funds and awarding illegal privileges. Similar charges have been filed against two former prime ministers, other officials, and some of the country's richest men. Meanwhile, interim president Abdelkader Ben Salah appears likely to continue in office, even though his term expired July 9th. Ben Salah was named to replace President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who was forced out in early April amid mass protests that have continued every Friday. Elections were originally scheduled for July 4th, but have been postponed indefinitely. Military Chief Ahmed Gaid Salah reaffirmed his support for Ben Salah yesterday, despite protesters' demand for him to be replaced because they want a clean break with the country's old guard. The post-election turmoil over Malawi's Electoral Commission has taken a turn on gender issues. Thousands of women marched in Malawi yesterday in defense of Commission Chairperson Jane Ansa. They said Ansa is being targeted with insults on social media because she is a woman. Opposition groups say she mismanaged the recent election in which President Peter Mutharika won a second term. They just want her to resign. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
The women, mostly in white t-shirts, carried various placards with messages in support of Jane Ansa. Siwode White, the chairperson of the Forum for Concerned Women in Malawi, organizer of the protest. She says the women were not protesting for Ansa alone.
They're also unhappy with the abuse that has been spread to all of us as women in the name of Dr. Jane Ansa. We're saying we're not tolerating it. It's enough. And we're saying Jane Ansa will not fall. She will not resign. She's standing. She cannot dance to the whims and wishes of people who are disgruntled.
Speaking to VOA, University of Malawi Political Science lecturer Mustafa Hussein said that although the women have a right to demonstrate, the reason for Wednesday's protest is not convincing.
In those previous demonstrations, there were also women. And secondly, those demonstrations are to do with the elections, not a woman, but because of what people feel were mismanaged the elections.
Another political commentator, Sherif Kaisi, supports Wednesday's demonstration. He says the insults flung at Ansa were too much.
If you look at the social media, for instance, like WhatsApp and Facebook, this lady has gone a very traumatized kind of life. She's being abused, you know, private parts are being said openly. You know, people are writing just quite a lot of things that which is even against our own culture. So on that side, I'll side with the women to say yes.
Opposition parties called for Ansa to resign after election results showed Peter Mutharika narrowly winning a second term. The parties say she mismanaged the elections, helping Mutharika to win. The second and the third place finishers are still challenging the results in court. Officials from Human Rights Defenders Coalition, which organized the protests against the election results, say their actions have nothing to do with gender issues. They also say they will continue to demand Ansah's resignation. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
An innovative system to dispense medicine to patients with chronic illnesses is taking off in South Africa. The award-winning Pele Box, created by South African engineer Neo Uthiri, is a computer-controlled vending machine stocked with prescription drugs, with patients access using a personal code. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA in Johannesburg.
The Pele Box has been hailed as a lifesaver for many who use often crowded South African hospitals and clinics. The medicine dispenser resembles the common automated teller machine and functions in a similar way. Neo Uthiri, a young South African engineer behind the technology, explains why he created the Pele Box.
If you've been to a public clinic, one of the biggest challenges that you'll face is spending hours and hours to get access to your chronic medication. The idea was very simple. Can we create a technology, locally manufactured, locally born idea, where we can get somebody to collect medication in a couple of seconds instead of waiting hours?
Details of each patient are uploaded into a computer system connected to the machine. The patient must indicate the clinic or point where they want to get their medication. The machine consists of a simple hall of lockers controlled by a digital system. And Neo, who once had a chronic illness, explains the most exciting experience for patients.
We take pre-packed medicine. We would scan the medicine loaded inside a unit. It then sends an SMS to a patient saying, "Neo, your medication is ready for collection. Here's a one-time pin. Please come and collect your medication at Winnie Mandela Clinic." The patient simply walks to the unit. On that touchscreen, enters the cell phone together with a pin. It pops open the door. They collect. They're on their way.
This technology, first introduced in 2016, has been a hit among patients. There are 11 Pele Boxes already operational across the country. For years, 45-year-old Jennifer Shingange, a beneficiary of the technology, had to line up at dawn to collect her medication every month. She says since she started getting her drugs from the Pele Boxes, she chooses a time that suits her, including after work.
I like to say very thank you. Thank you so much. What is making me excited is that when I come here, I don't stand a long queue. I just put my cell phone and pin and press and get my treatment.
The Oram Institute, a leading healthcare organization that has partnered with Uthiri, expects to introduce 10 more machines in the city of Ekurhuleni. Up to 26 machines will be functioning across the country by September. With each of the Pele Boxes serving over 1,200 patients a month, authorities say they will go a long way towards shortening lines in hospitals and clinics. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.